Did Charlotte Lehan call you?
Call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. Our order of business today will be, we're going to start out with a brief work session on Senate Bill 863, and then we'll move to Senate Bill 904, and then House Bill 2238, if we have time. We have quite a few witnesses signed up. So, I will open a work session on Senate Bill 863.
Afternoon, Chair Burger. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 863. This is the bill about the just to refresh your memory about the charge for on top of the bill the electric bills for, that is nominated for the PUC. And in order to transfer those amounts to low-income home energy assistance program. This is the one that puts triggers in the law for the first and the second year. And if those conditions occur, then that charge will also become effective. And as you've seen, the revenue impact, this is expected to generate $5 million in the first year, which is very likely, and also that we expect the conditions to be also met for the second year of the biennium, generating another $5 million.
Okay, and this is economy dependent, and there's yes. No fiscal or...
Well, the fiscal, there's both fiscal and revenue statements as you have them.
Right.
And they are in your packet. It talks about how these programs through the Housing and Community Services Department, and primarily the fiscal is more discussion and analysis of the bill rather than a number for fiscal expenditures. Okay.
All right. We had a hearing on this, and I wanted to hold it over to let people think about it a little bit. But now I think we are ready for a motion after Senator Morris recovers.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 863 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved Senate Bill 863.
A.
It's we didn't amend it in our
No,
committee.
It already came to us amended.
Yeah, so it's Senate Bill 863A.
Excuse me.
To the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Telfer.
Just clarification on the record that this is obviously a fee, not a tax, and that the fee is to cover the what's currently the bill collection costs and costs in turning service on and off for people who have, for one economic reason or another, are facing this problem. Normally, a person has a charge to have their electricity turned back on. So it's raising $10 million over the 2 years, and so is that, in fact, a fee to cover that cost? And that there's no excess fee. I guess here's my concern is, you know, low-income people, I have no problem with assisting them. But to dictate that to my neighbors who may not want 35 cents added to their bill every month to do that, having just recognized a nearly 15% increase in our electric rates in Central Oregon, I just want to make sure that we're not imposing a donation to our other Oregonians who may not want to contribute, so that it really is a fee covering the cost of bill collection costs and costs in turning service on and off more frequently above and beyond what people pay to have their service reconnected.
Okay. But it's not a fee imposed by us. It's a fee imposed by the utility.
But we're approving it.
Right.
We're allowing it to happen. So if it's taxed, then it's obviously they're a little different.
Right.
So I just want clarification that it is, in fact, only covering and reducing the cost, which ultimately the ratepayers pay anyway, because it doesn't affect all rate or utility companies.
Okay. Other discussion?
Do I have an answer to that question?
Senator Telfer,
I thought you were making a statement.
No, I'm looking for assurance.
Okay.
I think the idea is, in addition to what you've mentioned, the connection and disconnection, and we do have counsel here that I asked them to.
That is a technical question. Let's bring up the call in the lawyers or the recovering lawyers.
They never recover.
No, we don't. For the record, Brendan McCarthy with PGE, Senator Burdick, Senator Telfer. I've asked that question of people inside PGE, and there is not a dollar-for-dollar relationship. The best I can tell you is that what this fee ensures, or helps to ensure, is that the overall cost to the system is reduced. If we can avoid the shutoffs and the restarts, if we can get people into a payment system where they may not be paying their whole bill, but with the crisis assistance and bill payment assistance, they are paying on a regular basis. The overall cost to ratepayers is reduced by having this in place. The costs to the business are higher without it. Ultimately, PGE would be seeking to recover those costs in the rate-making process, and having this bill payment assistance actually allows us to not have to recover as many. And it's not a dollar-for-dollar relationship, and it's not just for those reconnect charges, but it is about consistency in payment and getting people to pay on time. So that's an overall help.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, because it's not dollar for dollar, there is some assistance in this $10 million then to help people pay their bill.
Senator Burdick, Senator Telfer, absolutely. That's exactly what this bill is about.
So is that not a tax instead of a rate, a fee that covers the cost of a operation, a service? This is above and beyond the cost that the ratepayer would recognize with the turnoffs, turn-ons.
Senator Burdick and Senator Telfer, it's been a long time since I've answered questions relating to which is a fee and which is a tax. When this was first put in place back in 1999, it was viewed as not being a tax. This meter charge was not viewed as a tax. It's not assessed on all people in the state, and the amount that is assessed is a correlation between what it's assessed for and what it's being used to pay for. It doesn't. My recollection is that there's not always a clear, bright line between what's a tax and what's a fee.
Okay, let's stop you right there. We have LC here if you want to hear from him. LC, where are you?
Please.
But noble attempt. Noble attempt.
Hello, I'm Gordon Howard with LC. Senator Burdick, Senator Telfer. Mr. McCarthy, who used to be with LC, is correct that it is not considered a tax. In terms of your specific question, though, we don't see, in looking at the legal guidance, the need for a precise one-to-one correlation between the benefits to ratepayers versus the amount of money collected. A rough correlation is considered sufficient, and therefore, based on that, we believe that we've opined in the past and continue to believe that this provision is a fee, not a tax, because it does benefit the ratepayers by reducing the overall costs of provision of electricity to the system.
And now I may not have the answer, people here, but so if it's $10 million, what do we think the correlated amount is? I mean, how much above the 10, how much below the $10 million is the true cost of the shutoffs costs?
I don't have an answer for that. I don't have the information. I don't know if Mr. McCarthy could give any more guidance on that.
Senator Burdick, Senator Telfer, I don't have an answer for you on that particular question. I just don't know. I can speculate.
Okay. All right. Other comments? Would you please call the roll?
Senator Hatch?
Aye.
Senator Kelper?
No.
Vice Chair Morse?
Aye.
Chair Burdick?
Aye. Okay, the bill has passed. Senator Hass, would you like to carry this?
I would, Madam Chair. I notice that Senator Shields is gone, so happy to.
Well, how about you be back up, and we'll ask Senator Shields if he'd like to carry it. Okay. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 863 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 904.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Senate Bill 904 would direct the Oregon Business Development Department to establish a program to allow rural airports to create a special district based on increment financing from property tax revenues. The formation of the district would be required to have approval of 100% of the other districts that have the same land area as the airport financing district, and also the approval of the Oregon Business Development Department as well as the commission. The measure has a -1 amendment which limits the uses of some of the property tax rebates that from both infrastructure and services to just infrastructure projects. And so it narrows the focus that the money could be used slightly. There are a number of there's a little bit of vagueness with related to the measure as far as the means by which the increase in property tax or property values due to the airport would be calculated. Typically, the example we have of tax increment financing is the urban renewal program in the urban renewal districts. And this requires the assessor to freeze the total assessed value of the properties in that district in the year that district is formed. And then any increases from that value would be the tax from those increases would go to the urban renewal districts. So this measure seems to form an urban renewal district, or not but a tax increment financing district for the airports, but does not provide the usual board or oversight committee that would come usually accompany a district. And however, the language is a little bit unclear where it calls for a rebate of any additional taxes that come from increases in value. That could be up to 50%, and the process by which the additional value is determined is vague. It requires the airports to certify what additional value they think has come from their airport in the area, and then the Oregon Business Development Department would concur with that, and then direct the districts to rebate 50% of the additional property taxes that come from any increases in value that have been asserted. But it's not clear what the increase in value would be specifically. It's not as laid out, except that they would assert some value, and then the Oregon Business Development Department would then certify that amount. It could maybe perhaps use a little bit more definition. And it seems that the measure establishes a special district that would have a rate associated with it, and then the money would go to the airports. But then at the same time, it also provides for this property tax rebate from the other districts. And so I think that maybe some additional drafting would be necessary in order to achieve the intent of the bill.
Okay. appreciate that. We'll ask some of our witnesses on that point. Okay, we're going to start out with Gary Oxley and Aaron Fagra. And just the two of you, we have a couple other in the same handwriting that are signed up. But you want just the two of you? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Good afternoon. For the record, Gary Oxley, Oxley & Associates, appearing before you this afternoon on behalf of the Oregon Aviation Business Association, which supports Senate Bill 904. The Oregon Aviation Business Association is a coalition of small business owners who own and operate businesses that are related to or provide ancillary services to the aviation industry. With me this afternoon is Aaron Fagery, who is the Executive Director of the Oregon Aviation Business Association, and he will speak to the technical aspects of the bill. However, I would like to state that this bill does provide rural airports the opportunity to find and create economic development opportunities and, at the end of the day, create jobs. And I would like to emphasize that Senate Bill 904, which is before you, is a consensus bill from two sessions ago. Senator Starr acted as the facilitator of a group of stakeholders who worked out an agreement and produced the document that is before you today. I've also been advised that the Department of Aviation supports Senate Bill 904. Very simply, this bill states that any project a rural airport would like to undertake with incremental financing would require the approval of not only local governments, but also of special service districts. Those entities would, with the airport, have oversight of how the money was spent. There is also, as professional staff pointed out, a Dash 1 amendment, which OABA supports, and that was drafted to delete references to services. So only infrastructure would be covered under this bill pursuant to the Dash 1 amendment. And in conclusion, before Aaron speaks, I would also like to point out that you will hear today that the intent of this bill is to expand rural airports. That is not true. The definition, there is no definition in this bill that allows a geographical expansion of any airport. To that point, we specifically defined the boundaries of Aurora Airport, which is owned by the state of Oregon, so that we can put an end to the discussion about the bill expanding Aurora Airport specifically. So to that point, I think we have addressed the expansion issue. So having said that, Madam Chair, if it's meets your approval, I would ask that Mr. Fagery begin to walk you through the technical aspects of 904.
Okay, go ahead, and then we'll have questions after that. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Aaron Fagery. I'm an architect and engineer and have about 25 years of experience on over 30 airports all over the state of Oregon. Oregon is currently a leader in this concept of using a small airport as an economic development center. We kind of have a saying that if you have a good airport and you have internet service, you can compete globally today, and that's kind of what we're trying to do with these small airports, is give the small communities the ability to reach out and do things. Another way to think of them is that these airports are shovel-ready. We hear that term a lot, and that's actually what got our attention about 8 or 9 years ago when we started on this. People are saying there's no shovel-ready property in the state of Oregon. These airports for aviation-related businesses are shovel-ready if we can create infrastructure to use them. And infrastructure kind of is the key word. The current Oregon Building Code that we have to live with now requires of any hangar that's of any substantive size that would be useful for a business, that's bigger than just a little tea hangar, we've got to have sprinklers and we have to have hydrants. And our friends from Aurora are here, and we spent 3 years creating a water system at Aurora Airport with enormous difficulty, because these airports are typically outside of an urban growth boundary, which is good because the noise shouldn't be affecting the city and the urban area, but that makes it extremely hard then to create that kind of infrastructure. So this is funding intended to allow that kind of infrastructure to occur so that we can have businesses and jobs. I want to point out that all of these airports that would use this are publicly owned, so there is a public agency that owns them. Section 2, number 7, references the term airport sponsor. This is a term in the FAA and the state that defines airports that receive money from the federal government, and they can, the federal government only provides funding to publicly owned airports. So again, there is oversight on the revenue because it, it's inside of a public agency. It's important to point out that tax increment means that the only funds, no existing taxes would will be lost by any district that were to agree to do this. When a district is formed, that's the point where one would define what the current taxation is, and there would be no loss of those taxes into the future. There would just be the potential loss of 50% of future increases. So there's not a loss of any existing funding. The Oregon Aviation Board has pondered this and given their support, as they did 3 or 4 years ago when the prior bill was there. Gary mentioned that the only reason we stuck in very specific property definitions for Aurora was because we knew that people around that airport were concerned with it succeeding and creating even more jobs, and so they wanted to keep it contained. And so we have kind of gone along with that and specifically defined which properties define Aurora so that it can't arbitrarily be increased as part of this or any relation to it. I want to point out that most rural airports in our state use Section 307.120, which gives them complete or virtually complete tax exemption. So currently, most of our airports are not paying taxes of any kind, even on the private, even the private hangars on those airports, which normally would be taxed, through that provision. And we have specifically put into this bill that anyone who wants to create one of these districts has to give up that tax exemption. And at least I think of it as it, it's forcing the airports to become members of the community and to pay taxes for schools, fire, police, and so forth, so that it's actually a positive thing, and at least in some jurisdictions, it's going to be very, very good for the taxing districts, like the fire districts, because finally they will get something from the airport. The amendment which we went along with was to delete the phrase services and other things that weren't infrastructure. The reason we had it in, there was no hidden agenda. It's just that noise at airports is commonly the biggest complaint, and we thought it would be good to be able to use those funds for noise abatement, for trying to keep track of where airport noise is, but we're happy to take it out and just keep the emphasis on the infrastructure. Finally, the issue of kind of who determines the costs. You have to realize this is a small number of properties. I myself, for 3 or 4 airports, just in researching over the past 8 or 9 years, kind of the tax impacts of airports and what goals we could try to achieve, do that calculation myself. One can go to the county. You basically just download for each property the tax statements, and you would attach them with a spreadsheet that shows what the current status is, and then the increment in the future would be based simply on the county's tax records. So it's a very simple thing to do, in fact. And with that, I will thank you for considering the bill, and would just say that all of us are volunteers, and our goal is simply to create jobs for Oregon and to use our airports for that purpose.
Okay, now, in light of some of the comments that Christine made about the lack of clarity about how the 50% would be determined, if this bill does move forward, you would be, I assume, receptive about actually putting in the statute the methodology for determining the increase. Yep, I think that was a good point to make. Are there other questions? Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned shovel ready, and yet I understand Aurora is looking for a water system, and some of the economic development that needs to occur needs water. So that define to me what you mean by shovel ready.
I wasn't speaking about Aurora generally. Actually, Aurora does have shovel ready because the various property owners got together, and that's they took several years, in fact, to create their own water district, and they have a water system there in tanks and have water for sprinklers. It's not potable water, but it's fire protection water. Also, at these other airports, what could happen if there was a business that wanted to move there and there wasn't a water system, they are allowed to build a pond, to build tanks, to build their own pumps. It's just not a very efficient way to do things, and it would mean then every property owner builds their own water supply, which are all about equal size, because the fire marshal doesn't assume that there's multiple fires at once. Water systems are sized essentially for the largest building that would be on the airport.
Follow up. So if water is not the driving force here, give me an example of the infrastructure that we're talking about funding with this program.
Well, water is one. It would exactly be it. The way we're currently set up, it is shovel-ready. I was working with Baker City for the last 2 years, and we did a master plan for them, and we did a study of infrastructure. And certainly you could try to get a business to come in and then build all of its own water system. But, for example, with this kind of a district, one could say, when you come in, we are going to start do this tax increment, and that's going to create a fund so that we can get a water system for the entire airport so that it'll serve multiple businesses at the same time. And typically one negotiates with the local fire marshal or fire chief on a process, and as long as within 2 or 3 years one gets the water system in, then there's an agreement that we're moving in the right direction. Aurora did precisely that. You'll hear testimony from Dick Van Grunsven today that built his buildings, moved to Aurora, and created hundreds of jobs without the water system, but we had an agreement with the fire chief that we were going to get a water system in, and then there was a process to figure out how to fund it and so forth.
Other questions? Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morris.
Thank you. Section 7 has a definition of an airport. Airport sponsor means the city, county, port, state agency, or private entity. And I think the testimony reflected that private entities were not included. Is the intent of that to mend that out in an amendment?
I gotta find it.
Line 26.
Yes, I see it. Well, I would just say, yeah, it's in error because the FAA doesn't fund private entities, so that shouldn't be there.
Nice catch, Senator Morris. Okay. Other questions? Thank you. Okay. Next. We will hear from Charles Patterson, Janet Olmsted, and Keith Amundsen.
Senator Burdick. Senators, my name is Charles Patterson. I'm a resident of Wilsonville, Oregon. I am opposed to the expansion of the Department of Aviation's capital improvement budget through tax increment financing at Aurora Airport. My opposition has just been magnified by the uncertainty expressed by staff as to just how this whole thing would work. There's a lot of money at stake and a lot of peace at stake. My objections, though, first, Aurora is not a rural airport. Shouldn't even be in this discussion. If you go to AAA's website, TripTic, you'll find that Aurora Airport is about 3 minutes further from Portland City Hall than Portland International Airport. Secondly, because Aurora Airport is neither blighted nor stagnating, it is growing robustly without this measure.
And you've just heard testimony as to how businesses using their own resources, creative, working together, have been able to create a water system. And we applaud the jobs created through the creativity and investment. Tax increment financing has long been a vital tool for cities, where, as intended, it makes possible redevelopment of blighted areas and infrastructure expansions required to handle population growth. Cities don't have an option about whether they're growing or not. SB 904 does not fit those purposes. This bill is little more than an effort to find new public money to grab as state budgets run into the reality of our economy. Airports in Oregon have, it seems, primarily used state revenues to finance airport development by the Department of Aviation, fuel taxes, user fees, legislative allocations, and federal grants. But comes now a season in which this legislature is confronted with too little income to finance even essential functions, and so we have SB 904. It should be labeled the measure to have our non-flying neighbors pay for new aviation facilities, because the cash will come eventually from desperately needed taxes for local schools, local police, fire, street, parks departments. Oh, sure, each jurisdiction has the right to say no to being part of such districts. But in the political realities of local politics, each opponent will be isolated and pressured to conform for the good of the area, especially now after Wilsonville's been run over by Portland because citizens had the temerity to ask for a vote on whether our city council was correctly reading community support. In a matter of 2 weeks, promised solar industry jobs and investment were moved with the full support of state government. The message left behind for small communities who are trying to say, I don't think we want to join this district, is this: shut up, get out of the way, get out of the room, leave your wallets on the table so we can access money we can't find in state and federal government. Any jurisdiction trying to keep local tax revenue in school, city, or county coffers will be hammered with, look what happened to Wilsonville. Tax increment districts are going to proliferate. Airport developers who should sit down with their bankers and their neighbors to finance infrastructure, as they've done at Aurora, will instead be able to take money from children's education and vital local services through obscure tax increment districts. Districts that are difficult to understand. I understand staff's confusion over how this one might work. Is this how responsible legislators want to solve a budget problem? Simply foist it off on local government? It's an ugly, negative version of the trickle-down theory. Please take a more patient, thoughtful approach. Don't act in haste. Demand clarity, at the very least, of how the darn thing will work. The Department of Aviation can increase user fees, landing fees, fuel taxes to fund improvements and pay off bonds. And if business development makes good economic sense, it'll happen. Not every investor needs a handy public tax pocket from which to draw capital. When business makes good sense, good business sense, financing is assured by the market. So let's be patient and allow private capital markets to evaluate and respond to these perceived opportunities. Don't use a tool intended for urban renewal to make growth of a suburban, not rural, airport easier. The necessarily tough budget proposals in this legislature are inflicting enough pain on local governments and school. Please don't add this rock to their pockets while they tread water in search of solid footing. Thank you for allowing me to be heard.
Thank you. Let's go next.
Thank you very much for listening to us. My name is Janet Olmsted. I live in Wilsonville. And I agree very much with what my colleague had to say. A number of issues stand at attention in researching the measure before you. First and foremost, it is a significant departure from urban renewal norms in that it allows for what appears to be a glaring deficiency in oversight as to how the funds created would be spent. I'm of the firm belief that locally elected bodies should make the decision about how to spend public funds, not a handful of private developers with their own interests at stake. This measure would take revenue from schools and safety services. It would shift the cost of private development at an airport to local taxpayers who must then raise local taxes to pay for the services an extended airport would require. I'm struck by the idea that this is an effort to extract tax money from the many for the benefit of a handful of individuals who could profit greatly. And when bill proponents tout the pitch that economic benefits of such a bill outweigh any opposing reservations, they tend to factor in only those benefits that would be to their own advantage. This is plain and simple, a subsidy for private developers. Any way you look at it, it's a special interest bill that in the end bears no common good, gives no voice to the voting public who would pay for its consequences, and I ask each of you to prove to my community and to the vast majority of Oregon voters that you are here for the common good of the many and not the special interests of the few. Thank you for voting no on Bill 904.
Thank you.
I think it's the right path.
Mr. Amundson.
My name is Keith Amundson. I'm a resident of Wilsonville. I'm a retired urban planner with federal, state, and local experience. And I'm here to speak against Senate Bill 904, the Aurora Airport Tax Increment Financing Scheme. Basically, in my reading of the bill, I can only reiterate what's already been more eloquently said by my compatriots here. But I think these things need saying. The bill benefits a few developers, not the public at large. And urban renewal is for capital projects, in my experience with it, not for developing plans, and not the purpose. The purpose of urban renewal is subverted and weakened, used in this context. I also noticed that there don't appear to be any local people involved in the organization of this rather murkily stated bill. It seems to me that taxpayers need to be included if there's going to be a decent representation of what is to be done. It's basically outsiders running this show. And it's already been said that needed revenues for other purposes, for schools, for fire, for all of those kinds of things, which we all know are in desperate shape in Oregon. It strikes me that these airport developers, if they want an airport, they can develop it themselves and not call upon the taxpayers to do that job. It shifts the cost of airports to local taxpayers who have to pay increased taxes to pay for the services that an expanded airport will require. This is a bad precedent for using urban renewal, and it's a bad bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Okay. Ted Miller and Dick Van Grunsven. How I did on that one.
Madam Chairman and Senators, my name is Dick Van Grunsven. I'm the founder and CEO, owner of Vance Aircraft, located at the Aurora Airport. We've been there for approximately 11 years. As Mr. Fagry mentioned, we manufacture kits for amateur-built aircraft. We're the world leader in that business. The property I developed there has employed about 200 people. Our business has a gross of about $36 million a year. This is what we refer to as economic development. When we moved there, as Mr. Fagree said, we had received an exemption from the local fire district, which we very much appreciated, that permitted us to build and then develop a water system in the future. When we did develop that water system, we could get no help from any outside taxes. We had to do that on our own. If this bill had been in place, some of the $100,000 a year in property tax that I pay could have been diverted to this. Instead, we had to increase our taxes to pay for that water system, not get the money from anybody else. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ted Millar, and I own the South End Air Park at the Aurora Airport. And I've been chairman of the Airport Improvement Committee of the Airport Support Group for probably 10 years. Most of the benefit of this Senate Bill 904 is going to go to the surrounding communities because the FAA has paid for the taxiway improvements and the runway improvements. And as Dick mentioned, we paid for our own fire suppression system. But there's also needed a facility to base some fire equipment there, emergency services equipment. We have bad roads and lack of drainage. We don't have public water or public sewer that comes to the airport. And you know, as a compromise with a lot of the surrounding neighbors, we've agreed to not expand or push for the expansion of the airport beyond Airport Road, Kyle Road, Canby Hubbard Highway, and Arndt Road. But we need to be able to free up some of the land that's already there, which is owned by the state, not by private enterprise, for where these storage tanks are located and things like that. I think it's a compromise bill where it allows half of the money to go back to the local districts, and part of it is going to be used here. But the communities are going to get the biggest benefit of where that money is going to be spent, and the road improvements, bringing sewer and water, and additional fire protection.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Here she goes.
Actually, probably to both of you. For over 8 years, I was either vice chair or chair of Ben's Urban Renewal Agencies, which has a number of areas. So I'm fully aware of urban renewal and tax increment. So what it looks to me like is in this bill, it's a little bit of a hybrid of that. It isn't exactly urban renewal, although it's trying to utilize that. But the direction is tax dollars paying for the infrastructure. Why, since you were kind of doing a hybrid anyway, why didn't you take the approach of an EID, an Economic Improvement District, whereby those property owners would be paying for the improvements? So why, since we're taking an existing statute and trying to mold it into something that works outside urban growth boundary lines, why didn't you take the EID approach versus UGB approach?
I haven't been the one that's driving the bill. I've been on that committee, and I know some of the benefits that are needed. The Aurora Airport's kind of an anomaly. It's partially owned by the state, partially owned by private enterprise. And Senate Bill 680 mandated that rural airports be used as an economic development hub, and they stated that the Aurora Airport should become a model so that they could work out all of those various things that don't necessarily fit into one box. And I think this is just one other tool that they feel is needed to pay for some of the things that can't be paid for by other means, like improving Airport Road, Kyle Road, bringing sewer and water that are outside of the area, those kind of things. But I don't know if there's another better choice.
Senator Telford, that's a good question. After we go through the witnesses, I think I'll pull the Mr. Oxley up and see if he can address that.
Good.
Thank you very much. Okay. Fred Netter, Rod Yoder, and Greg Leo.
Thank you. Chair Burdick and members of the Finance and Revenue Committee, my name is Rod Yoder. I'm chief of the Aurora Fire District, and I'm here today to urge a do-not-pass vote on Senate Bill 904. Our district protects 64 square miles of area in Marion and Clackamas counties. We depend on property tax as our primary funding for emergency services. Our tax rate presently is frozen due to Measure 50, which I'm sure you guys are very well aware of. So currently we have no way of increasing our rate. Our rate was formed at the time that we were a totally volunteer district. Now we're into a somewhat combination with four full-time firefighters and still working with 45 volunteers, but no way to increase our rate. So we currently depend on a five-year operating levy to supplement our budget. So every dollar in our budget is crucial to the services we provide on a daily basis. Although there was not a fiscal impact statement available as of Friday, I did some conservative estimates. And as was brought up earlier, there is some vagueness in the bill. But when I read the bill, it specifically Section 3, Number 3, partial rebates may not exceed 50% of the increases in property tax revenue. So that, to me, means any increases in the revenues. And later on, it goes on in Section 7, 5B, it says, with respect to property inside the airport boundary, property taxes collected based on the increase in value of commercial and industrial residential property and after the date the increment financing was established. To me, that means that any increases, and normally through the tax department, we get about a 3% increase. So those would be increases in revenue, and I would assume that half of that then we would not receive. And based on conservative numbers, just our 3% increase alone over the period of this 25 years, if we did not receive half of it, could be upwards in the neighborhood of $417,000 or more. So there's a substantial amount. There's some vagueness, maybe there's, you know, some problems in how they figure the increases, but that's the way I read it. Another item was as far as 100% unanimous decisions, those were based on the public-private partnership committee, and that doesn't include the Aurora Fire District. It would include one member from the county and one member from airport business, one member from airport management, and one member that owns aircraft. So it asks, it does say you need a unanimous decision for expenditures, and then that in the next paragraph or the next line says this is an advisory only. So even with that unanimous, it's still only an advisory, so the state could still spend the money the way I received. The way I read it. So I think there's several problems with the bill. Our call volume in our district has grown at a tremendous rate in the past, and we're going to need to fund, like I say, with more personnel in the next 25 years. So we will be depending on our property taxes for that. And I would turn it over now to my board president for further information on the fire district's view.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chief. Chair Burdick and members of the Senate Revenue and Finance Committee, I appreciate this chance to talk with you. I am Fred Netter. I live in Aurora, or just outside of Aurora. I've been the president of the Aurora Fire District for quite a number of years, 40 years in the fire service as either a volunteer or a board member. And I'm very passionate about Aurora Fire District. And the chief spoke to the fiscal impacts of what could happen with the Aurora District. I'd like to speak a little bit about the political impacts of what might happen in our area. Impact on us could be, in fact, if we do have what I understand on this, the right to opt out as a special district. we opt out, it kills basically the tax increment financing district. It does not exist. So as a fire, the way I've read this thing, the fire district says we need the revenue, we can't afford to give up any of it, so we decide we have to opt out. There will be no tax increment district for the airport. That puts us in a position where we will be lobbied in every way, shape, and form to try to get our yes vote. It also puts us in a position where we'll probably have hotly contested elections, which is nothing wrong with that, except for when they're used for the benefit of loading the board to get this district to pass. That puts us in the middle of it, and we don't need to do that. We have a very, very good working relationship with the Aurora Airport right now, and we'd like to continue that. Just the fact that this bill has been up here before your committee and gotten all the publicity that it has and put us in a position where we have to come out and speak against it has already, I'm sure, damaged that position that we have with the airport. And we're not thinking that that's the right way to do this. We do have 64 square miles. Aurora Airport is only about 1 square mile of that. If this were to pass and we did not opt out, the other 63 square miles, the people that are in that, would be paying taxes to supplement the growth at the airport because we have to provide that service. And the costs don't go down just because we get half of the taxes. We need to provide 100% of the services with only half of the taxes. We need 100% of the taxes. So we can't do it without opting out, and that puts us in a bad position. And we are struggling for revenue. Every dime we can get, we need to go after and try to save. I am also a member of the Aurora State Airport Master Planning PAC, and I will assure you that as a member of that, I've never once heard anything talking about blighted around that area. The urban renewal districts basically prefer blighted. This is a modification of that. The area is not. It's robust. All of the word that we hear in our meetings about planning for the airport is that it's a rapidly growing business hub. You heard that in some of the testimony here today. It is a growth area. Why, then, do we have to take tax revenue to try to improve infrastructure and stuff around there? If it's rapidly growing, we should reserve that kind of financing for those areas that just can't come up with the revenue anywhere any other way, and they are blighted. So I'd like to see you find another way to finance this type of growth of the Aurora State Airport. We are not opposed to the growth. We are just opposed to taking the revenue from the other 63 square miles of our district to help the airport. Thank you very much.
Greg.
Chair Burdick and members of the Senate Finance Committee, for the record, my name is Greg Leo. I am the elected board member from position number 5 to the fire district. Had there been more discussion before this bill came out, there might have been more clarity and more opportunity to find the way to meet the needs not only of Aurora but other rural airports. But this bill, frankly, surprised us. It came out late in the session, although there was a similar version last year. But it came out with different nuances this year, which raised a number of questions. You know, for example, Senator Telfer has, you know, raised the question of an EID as being a possible vehicle. Never been discussed. We've talked about, in the past, possibility of creating a port district to meet these needs. Was never discussed. Later, I believe you'll hear testimony from the city of Aurora that has aspirations about expanding the city boundaries in order to reach up to the airport to provide sewer and water. It has never been discussed. There are a number of aspects of this which are difficult from a local point of view, and specifically I'd like to direct your attention to Section 4, Sub B, 2, A through D, which is the membership of the committee. In looking at this, it appears that there really is no local representation, although there may be local impact. If we find with two fire stations that are probably vintage, I would describe them as ones that are near needing replacement, and our long-range planning is looking at building a new fire station to replace those spaces. How are we going to do it when one of the biggest sources of revenues for the district is limited by the 50% rebate, which, frankly, you know, I don't quite understand how that works. What I would see the fire district having to do is the cost shift, having to send a levy out to voters in order to replace the revenues that are lost through not being able to collect that 50% increase in increment. And so from the get-go, this bill raises far too many questions, I think, to receive serious committee by this legislature. And I'm very concerned of the precedent it sets, but mostly I'm concerned about the damage it has done to corrode the local relationships. You know, in Oregon, we have this idea of Oregon Solutions, where we get together as friends and neighbors and sit down around common issues to determine good solutions. This bill is not part of that process. We were not part of the work group 2 years ago. There has not been local discussion about this bill. Clearly, there is a better way to do this. And without, conversation, I'm not sure that we will find it. So hopefully, this bill will create an opportunity for further conversation in the future. But I would urge you not to pass this bill from committee. Thank you.
Questions? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's been reference to the term blighted. Is there anything in statute that requires tax increment financing to be reserved only for blighted areas?
We've got somebody from the League of Oregon Cities coming up that we can ask. I think that's probably the best. I just might add
that blighted means underutilized. Doesn't necessarily mean it's been falling apart or just underutilized, meaning it has potential that's not being tapped.
Bare land could be developed.
Could be, yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. But I think that's also a good question for the cities who are going to be talking about urban renewal. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next we'll go to Ed Freeman and Bruce Bennett.
Senator Burdick and fellow senators, my name is Ed Freeman, representing Air Park Development LLC, and shockingly, I have nothing to do with Aurora. I'm a developer of industrial lands around the Scappoose Airport, and I really think this is a statewide issue that you're addressing here for rural airports, and I'm a real believer in Aaron Fagery's vision and others of creating economic development in the aviation clusters at these rural airports. I think it's something that the whole country is waking up to, that the transportation benefits of utilizing these airports and having businesses close to those airports would be like having a distribution center for Freightliner trucks next to I-5. It makes a lot of sense, and there's a lot of economic development going in that direction. One thing, listening to the prior testimony from the opponents, number one, this increment financing program obviously is not being foisted onto anyone. It's a local decision with the municipalities or the airport sponsors' involvement. The funds would not be going back out to private developers, but are being utilized by the airport sponsor for infrastructure improvements that they feel is necessary. And again, as I'm sure you already know, the FAA does not fund infrastructure cost at airports, publicly owned airports. They'll do runway extensions, towers, things like this, but they do not pay for sewer and water. At Scappoose, I've spent over $1 million to extend a sewer line to the south end of that airport, and we're dedicated to spending millions of dollars more to develop that land as we move forward. So this Senate bill and this increment financing may or may not be a tool that would be utilized at Scappoose. It all depends on each local decision-making body, but there's other rural airports out there around the state that might be their only option to fund sewer and water infrastructure costs. And for me, it's just another tool in the toolbox for economic development. Why not provide it and allow the local airport and sponsor and municipality to decide if it's right for them? It's not taking money away from current budgeting or taxes. It's the creating new economic development. It's these are new dollars that are going to be coming if the airport is developed with more industrial users. If they don't come, I mean, it's not like you're losing the money. If the companies don't come at all, they're going to be somewhere else. They may be in Washington, they may be in Idaho, and so that's. I appreciate your support. Thanks.
Thank you. Welcome.
Well, Senator Burdick and committee, I'm Bruce Bennett, the president of Aurora Aviation. We've had property at the Aurora Airport for 43 years now. The Aurora is a little confusing in that it's a public airport. Of course, the runway and the taxiway are owned by the state, but the property is a mix of a number of different private property owners and a big piece of state property. And the state property, I think, clearly follows the definition of blighted. There's vacant fields on both sides of the road. It just doesn't make economic sense. I am also, it doesn't make economic sense to develop because of the lack of infrastructure. I am the director of the Aurora Airport Water Control District. As you heard, we formed to put in a fire suppression system to make the property buildable. You drive by Columbia Helicopters, they got the big swimming pool water supply out in the front. That's for their fire suppression. And had we not formed as a district, each property owner would have its redundant little burn up a piece of their real estate with a water tank. So we put in metal water tanks and plumbed it up and down the runway. But we still need, there's no drinking water, there's a number of wells, there's a number of septic systems that are using up valuable property, and people on holding tanks. It's not a good way to do business. And we need things that the FAA won't pay for, parking, lights, access roads, both on the airport and external access roads to make safe ingress and egress. My company only has 25 employees. We were up to 35 a few years ago, and you know the economy has hurt us. The airport in general employs 900 people, but benefits tens of thousands. You know, it's not the comments that it benefits a few people are outrageous. You know, the ambulance flights that come out of there, the companies that support their businesses. State transportation is critical with airports, and I think they really need protecting and support. And so that's what I'm here to testify for. The Oregon Department of Aviation has voted to support this, and they sent with me a stack of letters for you to drop off. I guess that's it. I've urged you to vote yes on this, and I understand there's some fine-tuning that needs to be done, but that's an easy issue. And I do strongly support, of course, the Aurora Fire District. My impression and understanding is that this doesn't take a cent away. This is taxes on increased value, nothing from coming out of their pocket ever.
Thank you. Where did you say those letters came from, and are they in our record?
Oregon Department of Aviation. No, they said he gave them to me to deliver to you. He said they supported it. I sent you a fax or an email, excuse me. But it's from Mitch Swecker, the Oregon Department of Aviation, the owner of the airport.
Okay. Thank you. Questions?
I have a question.
Senator
Shelburne. You know, when you build something, usually you pay SDCs for capacity, increased capacity that you're requiring. So you take care of that. It sounds to me like you've taken care of water issues on your own as the developer and the business user, building user, whatever. I'm just real curious as to why we're using tax dollars to pursue development where you're currently paying for it on your own. Is there anything other than water that we're really talking about here?
Oh, and we're not really paying. I mean, we're paying for it on our own in that we are a taxing district. The Aurora Airport Water Control District formed a district, a tax district. We have to collect money from the Marion County Tax Department, sends out property tax bills, and then we get the money back to pay back the $776,000 that the fire suppression system cost. I'm doing that as a volunteer, and like you said, it's been 3 years. I don't have the time to do that again. There's a number of people involved that are volunteers,
And it's because of the case that it's not a single property owner or even a group of property owners. Like I said, it's a state property and the lessees of that, and then a number, dozens of private property owners that are the operators of the property, but then the benefactors are tens of thousands. And yes, all we have is fire suppression water. We have no drinking water. We have no sewer, parking, lighting, access roads. The entire infrastructure of the airport is kind of haphazard because it's a number of private property owners doing what they need on their property, the state doing what it can on its property, and there's no central authority or system in it. But it's certainly a public airport, you know, supporting the area from Salem to Portland. Does that answer?
Well, it does. It kind of reminds me, or it gives me the idea that along with an EID approach, you might look at, you know, when you develop what an SDC charge would be for a location or a community, you know, this might be another way to do it, is to come up with an SDC that would cover the cost of these, and so that you divvy that up along with new development because it's capacity. And so that's another way to fund this in the form of what we, another hybrid of an SDC, the system development charge for anybody that I've lost.
I agree. But the challenge that I see is the vacant property. It's sitting there, you know, dozens of acres, and until there's an infrastructure, there won't be a tenant. So it's kind of a chicken and the egg.
Thus the SDC
problem. No one will lease it. Yes.
Senator Hess.
Thank you. I've got a question that has to do maybe less with taxes and more the overall picture, maybe the 30,000-foot view, which might be appropriate in this bill.
That is if you have oxygen.
they don't have that big of planes landing at Aurora.
What is the case for beefing up rural airports in this state? I mean, I understand the economic development benefits, and I sympathize with that. But beyond that, do we need more of them? Do we need more infrastructure there? Is there a demand? Are there more people flying to small airports around Oregon? And aside from the economic benefits, where's the data, or can you provide us with some information that says, yes, we really need these because more and more people are flying into Lebanon, and they need to be safe, and they need these—they need all of this.
I'd have a hard time pointing to a single study document, but yes, absolutely. NASA has just completed a huge study looking at the transportation challenges, and that's exactly what they found, is that instead of everyone in Oregon landing at the Portland International Airport and taking a rental car or a taxi to their destination, that if they are able to, I mean, all the people, the ambulance flights, the businesses that are very close to the airport, that's who uses the Aurora Airport. As they do the Baker, the Burns Airport, so the small airports are growing in their utilization. It's a little bit of a dichotomy that training is slowing down a little bit because of we're still suffering the impact of 9/11 and the economy. But then that's what goes on a lot of small airports is flight training is what you think of. But the point-to-point transportation, people that have business in Wilsonville or Woodburn and don't want to spend an hour on the highway and another hour at TSA, the efficiency of their business requires them to go from a little airport to a little airport, a rural airport to a rural airport.
Follow-up. Seems like there would be data on that there's a need here.
Absolutely.
And there are more people flying into Baker and that would help build the case, I think, for some kind of a...
Well, I certainly could find data for that.
Thank you. Senator Morris.
Thank you. This is a comment in response to Senator Telfer. It would occur to me that airports inherently are removed from infrastructure by virtue of no one wants them
one.
In the urban center of a community where infrastructure is available. So as a matter of public policy, it seems to me, you know, to think, well, is this an underutilized asset for economic development in our state, and how can we propagate that in a way that that benefits the community and the state? So I'm thinking about in my own district, Corvallis. We have a very, very large airport, but it's vastly, vastly underdeveloped, and it's removed from infrastructure. So how do we get those services out there in a way that allows that development to occur?
Senator Telfer.
That's a good point. Let's define services as takeoffs and landings increase. What really are the services that are required out there requiring all this development? I mean, really, what is the economic development? Are we talking about car rentals? I mean, what is the economic development that's created because we've increased takeoffs and landings?
You hit the nail on the head. A bunch of the little things, the local restaurants, the local hotels, the car rentals, the local fuel tank, the local restaurant, just the general services, the grocery store. You know, the Aurora Airport spends literally millions of dollars in the neighborhood, just again with the employees, and then, but more significantly, is the customers. You've got five people come in on a business airplane, and that's maybe five cars off the road for a period of time. But then when they get to the airport, of course, they need food and immediately a restroom and water and fuel for the airplane, and I think the best point is that it's separated from the city, so there isn't the city's infrastructure, and it can't become part of the city because the city and an airport, the airports need empty space around them. They're good neighbors with agricultural space and undeveloped land for safety and noise, and so by their nature, they're kind of stuck out in the sticks, but they need the infrastructure. It was a lot of work getting this fire suppression system in, and it is a little bit ad hoc, me as a volunteer forming this district, but it would be really nice to have it a more formalized system, not to any excess, but to benefit everyone by having the lights and the sewer and the water. Right now, there's no plans for that. We've got the fire suppression in because we needed it. We're at a building stop, and Van Grunsven's aircraft, the biggest manufacturer on the planet, wanted to move there and couldn't. But that was a single obstacle. And the little things aren't that little: the water, the sewer, the parking, the lights, and again, not just on airport, but where the airport blends, making a left turn lane into the airport and improving the roads and the lights outside, the traffic signals and signage around the airport.
Okay. Thank you. Next we'll have Mark Landau, we'll have Renata Wakely and Kate Porsche. We're running a little short on time, and you're signed up on the same position as a lot of other people, so if you have duplication, if you could just keep your remarks brief.
Okay. Hello. My name is Renata Wakely, and I'm the planner for the City of Aurora. The mayor asked that I come speak because he wasn't able to attend today. While the city supports economic vitality at the airport, the city believes there are opportunities to address the water and sewer needs at the Aurora State Airport through an existing system because the airport's located less than a quarter mile from the city limits. In 2008, Marion County, Oregon Department of Aviation, and the City of Aurora signed an intergovernmental agreement acknowledging the need for coordination in managing growth at this airport. The City of Aurora believes the provision of a new separate taxing district for airport improvements would discourage that regional collaboration in meeting their infrastructure needs. While there may be circumstances where rural airports do do not have the option of connecting to existing city services. The city wants to, the city believes that that opportunity is here, and maybe some provisions be made that when there is the opportunity to connect to city services, existing systems, those airports would not be able to create these tax increment districts. Permitting airports to establish financing districts would allow private interests to use local tax dollars for private development while pulling resources away from other local agencies. The city also believes this bill lays out a model for misuse of tax increment by private developers with very little provision for the local oversight. It has been said that in the case of the Aurora State Airport, that this would be bringing services, and I just want to make clear that this is not, there's no proposal at this time to be connecting to infrastructure system that exists and is really close and could provide services. This is creating a new separate system that the city believes would impact their water and sewer existing system. So thank you for your opportunity.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Chair Burdick, committee members, I'm Kate Portia. I'm from the fine city of Albany, Oregon, and I work for the city as urban renewal manager, and I also volunteer my time as vice president of the Association of Oregon Renewal Agencies, and I'm also the co-chair of the newly formed Urban Renewal Oversight Committee that joined forces with the taxing districts and urban renewal that came out of last session's House Bill 3056. So I'm here today representing AORA and the city of Albany, and we've got some concerns with this bill. We have written testimony before you, so I'm just going to hit the highlights in order to be brief. Urban renewal, of course, is a vehicle of tax increment. That is the mechanism that is used to make urban renewal work. And we feel strongly that urban renewal is a dynamic tool, but it's also a fragile tool. And we have concerns that Senate Bill 904 stands to harm the tool of urban renewal by expanding these powers without the backdrop of the existing Oregon statute through the form of 457 that's already in place. So we feel that this expansion of urban renewal powers without those checks and balances that are found in ORS 457, because, of course, this bill doesn't tie to ORS 457. And I think you all are aware of those, but many of them include the specific and sort of stringent findings of blight that you have to go through in order to create an urban renewal district, the oversight and the both public and transparent process that we go through at both the creation of and the operation of urban renewal districts as we move along. And those things aren't in existence with Senate Bill 904. We also have concerns that there are some technical issues on this. I think those issues have been raised before you here. Some attorneys and people that are way smarter than me from our side of this looked at this and had concerns with how the rebates would work exactly, how that technically would function. There's also concerns about the implementation and the distribution of funds. The tax assessor in my area, I'm not his favorite person because urban renewal is complicated and the computations that they have to run are complex. This would be yet another mechanism that they would have to take into account at a time when county budgets are already really constrained. So we have concerns about that. In the end, we basically feel that this bill could have far-reaching implications and could severely undermine the dynamic tool of urban renewal. Right now, a light, as you all know, is being shown brightly on all funding mechanisms as budgets are very tight. We want to make sure that urban renewal is around and exists as a dynamic tool to help in the cases where it really is applicable, like in Albany, where we've been able to leverage a significant amount of private investment downtown. And we worry that this expansion of the tax increment tool and the way it's being used outside the checks and balances of ORS 457 really could undermine the use of urban renewal as a tool in Oregon. So we respectfully request that Senate Bill 904 not move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Okay. Mark Landauer and Michael Novak. I would ask you to be very brief.
Yes, indeed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Mark Landauer here representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. At the outset, I'd just like to state that the proponents of this bill certainly have identified a meritorious issue. We do have concerns, however, on the execution of how they have done so in Senate Bill 904, and as a result, we are opposed to it. Many of the concerns that our organization have with the bill have already been stated. I would like to point out a few other items, however, that ought to be brought to your attention. One of the things that is certainly of concern to us is that the way this bill is set up, there may not be any direct accountability by public officials, either for the sponsoring agency, and there's certainly a dilution of public oversight on the airport public-private committee that's established in this bill. As previously stated, only one member out of four would be from the public sector, and the sponsoring agency can be either a city, a county, a state agency, or a private entity. We certainly oppose a private entity, but even with a state agency, there is no direct public accountability for how those funds are expended, and we think that ought to be tightened up if this bill were to go forward. Another issue that we have is that how those monies are spent need to be rigorously have some oversight. As a result, the bill does mention an audit, but at a minimum, urban renewal agencies go through annual audits. We think that ought to be included in the bill as well. Finally, I mentioned that the private sector could be a sponsoring agency. We certainly don't support that. And with that, I'll just conclude my remarks and
thank you.
Reiterate our position. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, Michael Novak with the League of Oregon Cities. I'll go ahead and be brief since so much of what was in my testimony has already been stated by other opponents of the bill. The League of Oregon Cities does oppose Senate Bill 904. My colleague, Mr. Landauer, went over many of our concerns. One of the things I do want to highlight, though, that was said before is, and actually something similar to what Senator Telfer was talking about, is that statutory authority already exists that would allow airports to work cooperatively with local governments in partnership to build out some of this infrastructure. And there was a concern that we have about the dubious precedent about using tax increment financing for this type of activity. The amendment that would eliminate services goes a little way toward alleviating that, but that's still a significant deviation from fundamental tax increment financing practice. And it really sort of sets up this misuse of the mechanism. It's a poor choice when these other options exist. Such as what Senator Telfer was talking about. And I just actually wanted to point out one thing. We've had, as you are well aware, we've had, 20 people testifying today, and you've had 20 different interpretations of what this bill does. So I think that speaks to an issue right there with the viability of this legislation. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Questions? Okay. Thank you. I think I'm going to call back Mr. Fagry just for 2 minutes max, and at that point the gavel will go down to address Senator Telfer's question about whether you considered alternatives and to take the rest of the 2 minutes as you see fit.
Thank you, Chairman. Senator Telfer. Oregon has been trying.
Identify yourself again, please.
Sorry, say my name.
Yes.
Aaron Fagry. You have to forgive us. We're trying to be innovative and creative in Oregon with these airports. I'm sure there are other mechanisms that could be used, and certainly the case of Aurora Airport was an example of the best at that point in time that could be figured out to do that. From my experience at other airports, there are many other airports that envy Aurora enormously, wish they could be that successful, can't figure out how to do it. And the beauty, at least in my mind, of the tax increment financing approach to things is that it it creates a win-win. You know, it's going to be hard when you have an airport with nothing on it, kind of unused land, to get people to agree to start a tax system when there's no one there, kind of. And there's no, you know, so there, it is the chicken and the egg problem. You know, the irony of this is, you know, I thought in the beginning that we could exclude Aurora Airport completely from the bill, just say Aurora Airport can't be part of it. And notice, you know, we do have two representatives of the districts, of the special districts that came, but there'd be no one here opposed to it. And in a strange way, that shows its potential success, that Aurora has worked so well by finding ways to develop what normally is considered undeveloped land, and Corvallis is a good example of another one. We have them all over the state. Part of the reason that they're not developed is that the FAA has taken a position against developing them for purposes of jobs and only wanted them used for landing airplanes and parking airplanes. Oregon, through our Senate Bill 680 and other things, is a leader, or trying to be a leader, in saying there's a lot more that could happen there that is airport-related, so it has to be airport-related, and it can create jobs.
Okay, let's
the last thing I would say is I believe all the people who testified against, or the representatives, were at the meeting with Senator Starr that actually crafted this language. So it has been around for a while. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we are going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 904 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2238, because we have somebody signed up who talks really fast. Okay, Mazin, really quick.
This is fast-moving operation, Madam Chair. House Bill 2238 primarily tries to include the small woodland tract lands as in the definitions of farmland, and in that way it allows them to utilize the lower schedule for the vehicle registration fee.
That was an excellent summary. We have Roger Beyer signed up. Welcome, Roger.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer, here representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. You just heard a summary of House Bill 2238. The purpose of this bill is just that. Currently in Oregon law, farmers or anyone with a ranch can get a special plate. It's a cheaper plate. They pay their fuel tax at the pump then. And we would like to make that option available for people, owners of small woodlands. Some of you, Senator Burdick, I know you probably have a copy of this from your time on the Senate Business Committee. You'll see that small woodland owners need many opportunities, or try to look for many opportunities to make a profit from their properties. Many of those, or most of those, don't include logs. This would give them an opportunity to get these cheaper plates and hopefully have a more profitable enterprise, and eventually maybe even pay more taxes to the state of Oregon.
Oh, we love taxes on the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. Questions? No questions. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2238. Open a work session on House Bill 2238. We have a work session, right?
Well,
is that only public hearing? Do we have fiscal on this yet?
We have fiscal. We don't have revenue on it yet.
We don't have revenue?
No, we're still working on it.
This is the revenue committee.
Isn't that our name?
I can't believe it. Revenue is lagging behind fiscal? All right. Well, that's what we're faced with. So we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2238 and wait for
a few
more months until revenue gets saved.
I think that's the problem of this session. Revenue's lagging behind.
Yes. Very well put, Senator Hatch.
I noticed the room cleared out, too. So.
Yes. Committee, I would just remind you that we are the invited guests of the Senate Business, Transportation, Economic Development, and whatever committee at 3 o'clock in the next room over to hear the transportation planning, presentation by the Transportation Department. that's constitutionally required, and so we're required to be there.
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
Next door.
Next door. So, with that.
Carrying over 2238.
Oh yes, and we will carry over House Bill 2238. Did I forget anything else? And we will send our staff back to do the revenue statement on it. We are adjourned.
What's this thing at 3 o'clock?
Why do we have to be there?
You actually recess.
We recess. So we come into session over there? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, we will recess.
You gavel in and gavel out.
What is this thing we're hearing?
We'll recess till 3 o'clock. Okay, that's right.
We're hearing the...
That's right.
We're hearing the...
Clock. Okay.